You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 452 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you in different locations. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion, Storm.
And I'm coming here from Renton, Washington. Did you send me notes? Home of, oh, I see those. Home of the Super Bowl 48 champion, Seattle Seahawks.
I like to think that you paused there because you were remembering where you were as you record this podcast. Is it snowy? Is it snowy Renton, Washington? You're still too busy opening the notes?
It is snowy Renton, Washington. There we go. Opening doc. There it is. What's 52? Who is that?
I couldn't think of anyone good off the top of my head. Do you want me to look it up?
Yeah, look it up. It's mildly snowy. The kids were off school today, which is really fun when you're trying to work a job. And the way that the snow is forecasted is like, it's kind of nice for commuting, but there's also more snow in the forecast tonight, which is threatening school tomorrow. And I've now reached the age, I was telling people on a Zoom call today, where I was like, I've reached the age that snow isn't fun anymore. And now I'm just complaining about it. It's sort of like when you get to the age where you're like, fuck, Home Alone isn't as fun of a movie anymore because I sympathize with the parents. So I've reached that age where I'm like, oh, snow. Because you remember Jan, like the thing that Jan hates most in the entire world, I would say is snow.
Oh, she's been freaking out about it for a long period of time, although not so much so that she didn't go to a movie this afternoon.
Well, it's so fine. It's not, she's not.
She's taking a certain risk.
She's not completely illogical, but I would say that Jan's number one op is snow.
That's probably true.
I can't think of it. I'll keep brainstorming. But yeah, now
who's our number one op?
It's a state. somehow it's an entire state that you might even like a city in.
Exactly. I was going to say, you're back as a Blazers fan now. Scoot Henderson's playing.
I am back. Look, the sports are complicated.
Mom was cheering against the Blazers.
I heard that she was like we lost, and I was like, who's we?
she has been very gung ho about seeing Seattle's own Paolo Banchero,
and you were booing against him also, right? Knowing your track record,
I was there wearing
who was it?
I was there wearing an NBA Walker Kessler. I was
Walker
there walking
Kessler?
In an NBA hoodie.
Is he bad now? By the way,
no, Walker Kessler's great.
Okay, fine. He's still good.
Yeah,
I was going to say you're cheering for Gershon Yabusele or something.
Oh, he's having a terrific season. I was there wearing my NBA hoodie as the neutral.
Just as long as you get to cheer against a player whose parents played at the University of Washington and is from Seattle, Washington.
That's and is Italian.
And is Italian. That's what gives you your lifeblood, is to vote for anybody else.
Number 52 is in my spreadsheet are Kevin Mawai, Seahawks legend.
There we go.
And then Hawili Kakaha.
Oh.
Also maybe born number 8 during his career. I remember
him being number 8. Hawili Jamora, Hawili Kakaha. There we go.
Yeah, but he didn't make the cut at number 8 in my UW jersey numbers.
Only at 52.
That's Napoleon Kaufman.
Was Rich Alexis number 8
no.
also? Is that
Rich
wrong?
Alexis was 24, I'm pretty sure.
24, okay.
I closed the file, but I don't need it for that one.
That's fine. That sounds right to me.
All right, let's get into this week's toasts, starting it's a lot of farewells this week. I gotta say, I guess we're gonna stay on the Seattle basketball front. We got some sad news this week. We're sending wishes to get well soon to DeJounte Murray, who suffered a rupture of his right Achilles last Friday while playing for the New Orleans Pelicans. Somebody who's already successfully come back from an ACL in his career. You don't see a lot of players suffer both of those injuries, you know, two of the most devastating, unfortunately, that you can suffer as an NBA player. But DeJounte Murray came back, was an all-star, was better than ever after the ACL. So hope that he can have that same kind of comeback from this injury.
For sure.
I guess this is on the UW front. We're saying farewell to Sammy Whitcomb, who signed with the Mercury, is an unrestricted free agent on Sunday. Whitcomb played 6 seasons across 2 stints with the Storm, including the last 2 years, won titles in 2018 and 2020 during our first stretch in Seattle before going to New York Liberty, is 5th in franchise history in made 3-pointers. So a UW legend who also goes down as a Seattle Storm legend as well.
We have one more sports farewell that you don't have in the notes.
Okay. On the non-sports front, we're saying farewell to Pecos Pit Barbecue, which announced on its website that it's closing all locations. Pecos Pit was opened by husband and wife Ron and Deborah Weiss on First Avenue, operating a former gas station across from what was then Sears, now Starbucks HQ, in 1980.
1980, 45 years of
A
Pecos.
45-year run.
Oh my God.
We talked about this a lot during the abandoned barbecue search, but Pecos was the spot for us to go get lunch
I
during
feel
the
like
Sonics days.
they like made you a fan of barbecue.
Well, I wouldn't go that far,
It
but
was crucial though in the early 2000s how important to us Pecos was. It was like the
I mean,
number one barbecue
it's
spot.
funny because Pecos is very unlike other barbecue, especially Texas barbecue, because it was like all sauce based
Yeah.
rather than,
The
just about amazing
chopped beef
brisket.
sandwich though. Oh, yes.
Yeah, I mean, so Pecos had then expanded to West Seattle. They had a Pike Place location, Pike's Pit, that had closed previously, and I think I want to say like a food truck, because the former owner of Red Robin, Jerry Klingon, had been trying to franchise them, and those efforts unfortunately were unsuccessful. I'm really disappointed. Like, the West Seattle one, even though it's close to me, I hadn't been to. I'd only gone to once, but the original location, the OG, I continued to go to regularly, had lunch there last year. So it will be missed. All right, this is a big one. You reminded me of this. We are saying farewell this week to a hero, to a legend on this podcast. Sam Haggerty has signed a minor league contract with an invitation to spring training to play for the Texas Rangers. And Baseball Prospectus responded by immediately putting the Rangers atop the West in
Wow.
their Pecota projections.
I was trying to think of like a S Stella, like, what is the context of that? I don't know if you've seen Streetcar Named Desire. Is that what it's from?
Yes and no, I have not. But it is very funny in the context that one of our grandmother's names is Stella. Or Stella.
I think Sam Haggerty. There are a handful of reasons. I think Sam Haggerty bears the largest percentage of reason that I now care about baseball.
I'm going to be real with you and say that it's probably Julio Rodriguez number one for me.
I don't know if it, oh, for you, that's fine. But it's just like the Mariners have had good players. Julio's great. But there was something about the when you could tell you actually care is when you start liking guys like Sam Haggerty. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kids like Julio. You know what I mean?
Everybody likes
Children, people who
Julio.
don't know baseball like Ichiro. But Sam Haggerty is like, when you're in it, you fuck with guys like Sam Haggerty. When I see people being like, oh, Ryan Bliss might be starting for the Mariners next year, I'm like, you're goddamn right, Ryan Bliss is starting for the Mariners next year. That's how you know you're in.
I believe
When they've got you.
that actually is how you know you got Mariners built. Technically speaking. But yeah, I
Don't
mean,
know if that's long enough.
wow, the audio cut off at a certain point, but you've got it all wrong. It's Onofrio!
I actually am sad though. No, I would rather, in fact, I'm gonna do all takes Tristan here.
Wow.
It's better to have Haggerty. Like, I didn't want to see bad era Swaggerty. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need to see the tail end of that, right?
I'm not going to have any comments about his hitting the last two
But
seasons.
that's what I'm saying. Like, that wasn't fun. We got to see the peak of Sam Haggerty's career, most
Always have
likely.
Haggerty watch.
Yeah. Like, we got to see that. We don't need it forever. It's amazing to love things and then let them go.
I mean, also, look, Haggerty's coming back from an Achilles
Like Pecos
rupture
Pit.
that he suffered at while
We should
playing at
not let
Tacoma.
those things go. That's
No,
different.
we don't need to let that go. Coming back from Achilles rupture that he suffered while playing for Tacoma last season, I was a little surprised that he got a spring training invite, because I don't think it's likely, based on the timeline, that he'll be able to play baseball during he'll be able to like play in games during spring training. Obviously, he'll be able to work do other work with the team, but the Mariners have certainly prepared for this by acquiring any number of utility players, including Miles Mastrobuoni.
There we go.
So When one door closes, another opens. All right. In less bittersweet news this week, we're welcoming new UW President Robert J. Jones, who's currently the chancellor at the University of Illinois and was selected to succeed Dr. Anna Marie Cause in August, becoming the first Black president for the University of Washington in their history. So that's very exciting. And then you wanted to make sure you.
Oh, yeah, we're not going to yada 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 past that. Hold on, I have comments on this. I thought this
Oh, I
was.
didn't. Okay.
Yeah, you think the Pelton cast? You think that I'm not properly suited to comment on call university presidents? How dare you?
Someone did ask for the trade pick.
Eventually, if you sit through all this, you might get interesting basketball talk. as chancellor, I thought this was a great hire overall. Honestly, the part that I didn't see necessarily is. Why it I think it is a better job than the University of Illinois. Illinois is education-wise a better university than UW. But I think size
Is
and
this according to U.S. News?
not the World Report, of course.
They're biased.
But I do think they have very similar profiles, these two universities. And there are a lot. The Big Ten in general has a number of universities that have very similar profiles. I think there's some complexities that mean that he might have a little bit more power or less oversight here necessarily, and a little bit less red tape at the University of Washington. At the same time, for UW, this hire of somebody who has been, I mean, chancellor president, basically the same thing, right? As
Yeah.
far as I understand it, who's
They
been the
do have
chancellor.
a separate president, but Chancellor is listed first on the Wikipedia.
There we go.
And that's what I'm going by.
the next step, if I understand things, is emperor. Anyway, and then Sith Lord. But the as I understand it, I think this is a great hire for UW though. Having somebody who's been in the Big Ten for a number of years, right? He's been at Illinois for a long time, who's run an institution that again has a similar profile sports-wise, education-wise to UW, and is so deep in basically the situation that UW is moving toward, right? And becoming one of these institutions because the Pac-10 is dead at this point, right? The most aligned institutions with UW in the past, it was those schools along the West Coast. And now the most aligned institutions with UW are largely in the Midwest right now. There are a couple on the West Coast, but mostly they are Midwestern institutions. When you think of what is UW, it is Minnesota, it is Illinois, it is Wisconsin-Madison, right? It is Michigan, those types of institutions. So this makes a lot of sense for UW. The only question I had is basically why this makes sense for Bob Jones, but that's not a question that we need to ask right now. And I think as it is for UW in this transition, it's a slam dunk overall. So I as much as I can be excited about a new president for the University of Washington, I was excited about this hire.
All right, well, you're also excited about a team that you were indifferent about mere weeks, mere days ago, as you wanted to toast to the Portland Trailblazers, who have now won 8 of their last 9 games after completing the home set sweep of the Phoenix Suns in overtime earlier Monday, just before we record this.
Incredible what is happening in Portland right now. Even though very recently I said that our op was the entire state of Oregon, somehow, if you carve out Portland, Oregon, and specifically their basketball team, there's a person in the crowd wearing a giant UO jersey. And I'm like, I don't agree with that, but I do agree with the rest of it.
I mean, it's wild because like this was a very close win. Most of these wins have not been. They beat Phoenix by 19, Orlando by 29, Milwaukee by 13, Orlando at Orlando by 22.
I mean, their only loss in this time period is to the best team in the league, and it wasn't that bad.
No, it was competitive. I watched the second half of that one, and like they had a fighting chance in that.
There was a news report that the Blazers were going to shop. It was Anfernee Simons, Jerami Grant, DeAndre Ayton. And I really saw that and I was like, are we sure?
I mean, yes, because the what's interesting about this is like, when a team that is in the lottery wins a lot of games like this, there's usually some consternation about, oh, they're throwing away their chance at Cooper Flagg, et cetera. And it's like, My thing is always, well, okay, if it's a bunch of players who aren't going to be on the team going forward, then yes. But if it's the young players that are leading it, then awesome
It's
because you
both,
don't need
though. It
help.
is both for the Blazers.
I think it's almost entirely the young guys.
Okay, that's good. That no,
Yeah,
that's what
no,
you're
I'm
saying.
saying Jeremy
Okay.
Grant's played very poorly this season.
I
Just
actually, I've
going to make
like,
him difficult to trade.
I
DeAndre
never
had a
thought I
great
would be a
run playing against
DeAndre Ayton
Phoenix.
guy, but I'm like, DeAndre Ayton's kind of good.
Mom was fascinated at how tall DeAndre Ayton was, and then I had to point out to her that Donovan Klingon is even taller than DeAndre Ayton.
She should see this dude from Florida. Are you aware of this dude?
Yes,
Ryu is
Reich.
7'9".
Yeah.
Reich is how it's pronounced.
I have no idea how it's actually
It's
pronounced.
R-I-O-R. He's
Oh,
Canadian.
okay. I
It's
was thinking
like
it was
Rue.
R-I-E-K, was it how I had it in my head?
No, he's Canadian. It's like Rue. But no, that's awesome if it's the young guys doing it.
Yeah,
Like,
no, I mean, Denny
but also
Avdia,
it kind of feels like a complete package right now.
Tumani
If
Kamara,
you see this team,
Scoot's
the
playing
way that
well.
they play in the last couple of weeks, you'd be like, yeah, that's a comfortable playoff team. And then you look how far out of the play-in they still are. I mean, the unfortunate thing is the Western Conference is just too good because one of the teams ahead of them for the play-in is also the Spurs, who just traded for De'Aaron Fox. So it does feel like the path there is going to be pretty difficult to even the play-in this year. But like the
Well, I think
way
the
that they've
goal
been
for the
playing,
Blazers is to like be Houston this time last year. I mean, they've talked
absolutely.
about Houston as a model, and at the time they did it when the Rockets came to town, I forget when it was in December or January, I was like, oh, good luck with all of that. But now it does not seem inconceivable.
I think it's been pretty fun
I
with
mean,
the way that Scoot's been playing, Shaden's been playing.
Ayton had a 20-20 in tonight's game, 25 points, 20 boards. But Anfernee Simons, 13 points on 4 of 16 shooting. Jeremy Grant, 14 on 5 of 13. The stars of this, besides Ayton, again, Kamara and Avdija combining for 41 points on 8 of 13 3-point shooting. A good Scoot game, 15 points, 6 assists. Those are becoming commonplace. Yeah, Blazers might
Scoot's
be
figured it
good.
out. Scoot has figured it out. I do like what Jeremy Grant brings. If they don't trade Ayton and Jeremy Grant, and I'm not as convinced about, but especially because they have so many young guards, where I'm like, they could just find more minutes for Scoot if Ant is gone, is the way that I kind of think about it.
I mean, I'd be very surprised if I might be somewhat surprised if they made any trade of significance before the
Okay.
deadline.
So
But
you think this team is most likely to come back? And who's under contract next year?
I mean, I don't think they have any notable impending free agents.
So this whole core could come back, and they basically, the plan would be next year, all the young players are kind of running the team, and then you can use one of Jeremy Grant or somebody like that as a trade piece.
There are two players who are not under contract for 2025-26 are Jabari Walker and D'Alano Banton.
Okay. Well, a toast to the Blazers. I squinted my way through. I turned on Koons 2, and I squinted my way through the overtime of this game. It was an incredible thing.
Since I got the Blazer Vision streaming, I had it on my
Blazer
computer.
Vision. There was a moment we turned it on for overtime because I really am just going out of my way to not watch these games because of how hard it is. And I was like, I hope there isn't an out of bounds situation where it tips off somebody's hand and then you can't tell who it's off of. And it happened within like 1 minute. I could just feel that was coming because I was like, I'm not going to have any idea what's going on. The fortunate thing is they don't actually entrust me to make that decision.
We go to our replay center in Fairwood, Washington, in HD, in SD.
SD.
You have one screen with a handful of different angles,
Rewind it
depending on
back
what the
again.
TV
Be like,
broadcasts.
I have no idea. I still have no idea. Like,
Also are not an expert in the rules.
are these like, I can't even tell they're on different teams if we're being honest.
The game is basically one long Rorschach test to you because you're like, well, I think I see a pinwheel there.
Your brain starts working in SD after watching it for a little while, though. All of a sudden, it looks really clear, and you're like, I'm not sure
I
if I'm
never got
happy.
to that point. That's why I had to spring for the streaming package.
The Blazer Vision. There was one last toast that I said I wanted to get in as well. It's actually a pour one out
Okay.
for the Shakeys in Fairwood, Washington.
Oh, yes.
It was, we got the news. This was a couple of weeks ago that Shakey's was going to close at the end of, not the end of January, like January 20th or whatever, something like that. And it was the most uniting experience for Fairwood, Washington I have ever seen. You would not believe. And look, this is no disrespect to Shakey's. I do not think their pizza is good. They're also, the amount of pizza places within a relatively close proximity are Papa Murphy's, more or less across the street, Mod Pizza, literally across the street, Little Caesars, just slightly past that. And then if you go even further, Domino's. And then if you go even further past that, Pizza Hut, plus a handful of others. There is a lot of pizza in this area, right? And I think Shakey's might be the worst of all of these options. And still, I feel like they'd been there for, I mean, the amount of years that Shakey's has been there since we were kids coming to Fairwood, right?
I don't really have that strong memories of that area
As
as a
a
kid.
meeting place, though, I think is what Shakey's really, really was, and that's what people rallied around.
Oh,
But I
it was to drive past the Shakey's and see what celebrations were advertised on their
all the
sign.
time. It's just gone. Gone. The sign is down, everything is gone, and it's so shocking. But the
The
last
pair
two
of
weeks,
Fairwood the Fairwood listener is gonna really this is really gonna hit home for them.
I guarantee you that those Fairwood listener and maybe beyond have been to team sports events at the Shakey's. It is a staple. It is a staple of
Even
team
I
sports in
somehow
Red
have been
Washington.
there with Luca.
You went there with Luca for a team sports event? Oh,
Yeah, after one of the baseball seasons ended.
so the city of Fairwood, city, I don't know, neighborhood of Fairwood, unincorporated King County,
Region?
rallied around the Shakey's more than I have ever seen. The lines the last couple of weeks, we're talking down the street,
Wow, this is
hundreds
like
of people.
the
They
old
ran out of
spaghetti
food.
factory in downtown Seattle, or in whatever you want to call that, I guess Queen
Queen
Anne,
Anne, yeah.
Belltown.
That's how it was when the old spaghetti factory closed.
Oh yeah, I had to get there
Ugh.
like first thing to actually get a seat in the bar.
Almost all of them are gone now, too, the old spaghetti factories, right?
Oh no, there's still plenty of them there,
But
but not in
in the
the
greater South Seattle area,
the one at South Center recently closed. Yes.
also gone.
But there's one up north, and I saw multiple old spaghetti factories when I was in LA over Thanksgiving.
There we go.
One that's in like a railroad station, an old rail station, so
Oh,
it was
that's
pretty
pretty
cool.
fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, people were devastated about the Shakey's closing. It was, I think I had underestimated it. I was like the Mavericks GM. I was like, it'll be fine. And then all of a sudden, people were so upset. I remember chatting to Katie, and Katie was like, what do you want me to do about it? And I was like, Katie was like, of course I'm distraught. And I was like, oh my God. That response, you saw this response in the chat where I was like, no one cares about Shakey's. And Katie was like, I've been so upset about this that she lashed out at
I
me.
believe it, she said. I mean, I'm pulling this up. Yes, it sucks greatly, but what can I do?
But
I
what can
wish
I
they would at
do?
least given it a little longer.
I don't even
It's
know
like,
what
I
that
just
means.
want some
Giving it a
wanted
little
some shared
longer.
acknowledgement. Katie, I keep checking the threads to be like, oh, they're going to open reopen under new management, but it seems like the new owner is doing something different.
I don't know. The people of Fairwood are devastated about this. So
Well.
it was locally owned as a business. The corporate chain was not locally owned. However, the business was locally owned. And I do think a thing that I've been thinking about recently a lot, as I assume many other people have been thinking about, is wanting to move away from, again, I mean, we saw this a couple of years ago, but then you always get pulled back in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The corporation pulls you back in, and constantly being intentional about what we're doing, not having it be a fad, not having it be something where it's like, oh, for a second we'll do this when I'm thinking about it. This has to be permanent to support places like this. I don't think the Shakey's was they weren't making enough money. I think they were done doing it. So it's sad to see it go though.
This actually reminds me that we should mention this
Seattle
was.
sports at some point? No.
Absolutely not. Only
Don't do
Portland sports.
it.
Mike
But not the rest of Oregon.
Babe Mike Babe posted about this on the Discord that there's a number of local restaurants and other businesses donating a portion of their profits this weekend to supporting immigration rights. So we'll put a link to that the participating small businesses, but particularly a number of restaurants are going to be doing it this weekend. I guess February 7th, so Friday night would
Yeah, and
be.
the unfortunate thing is, I mean, that's incredible that those businesses are doing that, is that these local and small businesses are not making that much money. These profit margins aren't that great for a number of them, but that they feel like and are willing to step up and do this in situations when ultimately all of these things, they're multi-billion dollar corporations, that some of whom do not care about these sort of things. And that's the unfortunate bit, is that, it's great that they are, it's unfortunate that they have to, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Which is a great transition to.
Talking about Little Woodies? Well, we should toast to this. Apparently, the Little Woodies in the airport is finally open. We have been talking about this on the podcast, Peltoncast, for
I gotta book a
years.
flight.
You got to go out of the end gates because it's in the end gates now. It's
Well,
not
if
going
you
to be
only
as
fly
centrally
one
located.
airline out of going way out of your way to only fly that airline, excluding cost, efficiency, timing, things like that, then you're almost always going to be in the end gates.
It's probably about 50-50, isn't it? I
Oh,
haven't done the math on the actual number of gates, the
I
C
haven't
and D
flown
gates
not out of
versus
the end
N.
gates forever. Like if I see a C or D gates, I'm like, oh, okay. I'm fine with it, but I'm just a little surprised.
So, well, we'll see where my flight is on Friday, whether I'm heading out of the end gates or not. But beyond that, it is Seattle Burger Month as we record this. February has hit, is upon us. It's also Black History Month, we should acknowledge certainly and recognize. But the first week of Seattle Burger Month will be the Cambo Diaspora Double Cheeseburger from Karuna Long of Sopan, which was named one of Bon Appetit's 20 best new restaurants after opening last February. Here's the description from Karuna. The inspiration behind this burger comes from the Khmer diaspora beef stick skewers that are prevalent in most Cambodian households throughout the U.S. Beef sticks are traditionally marinated with kroung, a Khmer essential paste, and usually grilled and served with jeruk, pickled veggies. I put these flavors together because they embodied the simplicity of the traditional American cheeseburgers most Khmer kids of my generation and younger fell in love with growing up in the U.S. as children of refugees while also being Happy Meal kids. The blend of kroung into an aioli while also marinating it in the beef allows me to stay true to the conventional roots of the Khmer flavor profiles while also honoring the joy we found as kids in your traditional American cheeseburger, usually made with American cheese. This looks pretty delicious. So, looking forward to trying this one out before I head out of town over the weekend. And I don't know if you saw this, the Burger Month, if you complete all four burgers this year and get your card stamped, it's going to be a Lil Woody's tote bag, which looks pretty awesome.
All right, I'm excited for this Burger Month. It's upon us. I can't wait to hear about this one.
All right, now we can get into Seattle sports. Starting with the Mariners, who have transacted again, although not to add a new player to the roster, it's to bring back Jorge Polanco, who they re-signed with plans to play him at third base this season. It's a one-year contract for $7 million with Polanco, with a vesting 2026 player option. It would be $6 million if he reaches 450 plate appearances, which would be a little bit short of last season's total of 469, and then a guarantee buyout of $750,000 for 2026 if Polanco is bought out of the option, per MLB.com's Mark Feinsand. Then that vesting option can also increase to $8 million, depending on Polanco's plate appearances. But Mariners counting on better production from Polanco after he underwent arthroscopic surgery in October, addressing the patellar tendon in his left knee, which was an issue last season. And look, based on the fact that Polanco struggled the way that he did last year, based on previous seasons, FanGraphs is pretty optimistic about his chances for regressing to the mean, making regression to the mean work for him this season. He's projected for 1.8 WAR by FanGraphs, which is good for 27th best among all free agents.
Wow.
Pretty wild.
I mean, we'll see. But the last time Polanco was in 2020, obviously the shortened season, the last time his OPS was as low as it was last year, it went from 658 in 2020 to 826 in 2021, where he was worth 5 wins and probably could have been an all-star that year.
Yeah.
I don't know if there'll be that big of a difference between these two seasons. I wouldn't necessarily expect there to be one. However, there were definitely moments that Jorge Polanco had. He was somebody who that feeling of when he's in the order, you're like, this, he could get a hit here. Like, he could do something. I felt like the maybe there was the one stretch that he had that it was basically like July, August, I want to say. That Polanco was pretty solid overall. So I was happy with this signing. It's not splashy, but they needed more infielders. And it was the kind of thing where, as they obviously knew that they sort of had Jorge Polanco in their back pocket. And I think that was part of the reason that maybe they didn't make another decision along the way, that they were having these conversations ongoing with Jorge. The Solano move happens, and you look at it and you're like, okay, well, Ryan Bliss probably isn't an opening day starter. My gut tells me there's probably also a Justin Turner. He hasn't signed anywhere else, has he? Conversation happening.
I don't think that Turner is a possibility for the Mariners at this point. Because I think part of the thing about if you're going to play Polanco at third base primarily, what means you're not going to play Donovan Solano at third base, against right-handed pitchers. So he's probably going to be playing first base fairly often against those pitchers, depending on what you're going to do with Luke Raley and
And then it's
Lawson
Ryan Bliss
Shen
at
also in the
second.
mix. No, I think it's Dylan Moore at second. I don't know why
Or
people
Dylan
have kind of
Moore.
forgotten he's existed. Like Dylan Moore may not start
Who's
more than
DHing in
half the
this
games at
scenario?
second. In that scenario, Luke Raley.
Okay.
So
I think there is one more bit of trans. I don't know. We'll
people
see.
do not expect additional transact based on the payroll and then based on just kind of the MLB roster spots. Like the thing about Ryan Bliss is, yeah, he might be your opening day starter at second baseman. He also might be in Tacoma. Like, there's so many different directions that they can go with the bench spots that I don't think almost any position player other than Solano is guaranteed to be. I mean, Solano, I'd be a little surprised if Mitch Haniger wasn't, and then Garver, I think his backup catcher is pretty locked in. But those, I think, are the only three bench players you would say
So
are
the first
certain
base
to be on the roster.
rotation is basically Solano and Raley.
And possibly Austin Shenton.
Okay, fine. I don't know. It solves one of those problems. It fills one of those holes, and I think Polanco's going to have a bounce back season. It does also feel like the conversation around T-Mobile Park has been so extreme this offseason, more than I feel like it's ever been. And I think this is something that people are starting to discover more and more. Do you agree that this has been a dialogue way more this offseason than the park factors of T-Mobile?
Yeah, I think so. And there was a really outstanding story on MLB.com recently that broke it down and introduced factors that I hadn't even thought about, namely that the wind is also a reason, something aiding pitchers at T-Mobile Park in terms of there's a tailwind on pitchers' fastballs that is making them faster than they would be elsewhere. Yeah, that's not a, in addition to the marine layer we've known about a long time, the batting eye. We've brought up a lot on this podcast, but the wind
And
and the
wasn't there an
gravity is also, I think, higher.
gravity, like an atmospheric reason?
Yeah. So it's like just a confluence of factors that is working against hitters at T-Mobile Park.
I think partially also free agents, obviously the Mariners can trade for players. I think free agents are also aware of this information. And for the Mariners, they're going to have to pay a number much higher for somebody to be willing to, I mean, more or less tank their value as a hitter, right? If they want to choose to sign in Seattle rather than being traded here, because it has happened with so many different hitters. There's enough evidence now that it doesn't feel like it's a short-term thing. I just don't get why did this not affect early 2000s Mariners? Were they just so good? Were the hitters that good? Or have these factors changed? Is the gravity different in Seattle than it was in the early 2000s?
I'm confident the gravity is not different. Like, as we've talked about, the strikeout factor in particular has been more of an issue the last few seasons. And I don't totally know exactly what the conclusion was from the MLB.com article, but it did seem like the evidence suggested that the 5 o'clock and 6 o'clock hours are when the sun effects at T-Mobile Park are the most extreme. And obviously those are times you are not playing when you start games at home at 7:10 on weeknights. And it does become something of those games if you start at 6:40.
So
So
basically, the last two seasons, they've moved up start times. It's only 30 minutes, though. You would
I'm
think
taking
maybe.
a partial win on that that explanation.
I mean, it could be just basically that if you strike out that much more for one third of the at bats or something like that before the sun is down, it's still, or just how late in the summer the sun goes down in the Northwest.
Yes. And
But
like
also,
obviously that's true all the time. The
it
other
was
thing
true in
that's
the early 2000s as
another
well.
thing I had not thought about until just now, a higher percentage of baseball at bats are earlier chronologically in the game now because of the pitch clock and the reduction of time between innings. Like think about it. Even though, a half, like you think in our your head a baseball game is 3 hours. Like now they're probably
It's
closer to
like
two and a half,
215,
but
220, yeah.
also like a higher percentage of the at bats are in the first half hour because you're not having pitching changes in
That
that
makes
period of
sense.
time.
Yeah. So you're saying Edgar Martinez, Brett Boone were just hitting like 11 p.m. homers, basically.
That's it. That's the conclusion here, yes.
It still doesn't fully make sense to me, but I do think it's something that's worth having a dialogue about. It's also interesting kind of how to understand how the Mariners should react to it. And I think the only appropriate response is to do nothing. Is that wrong?
I mean, they have talked about like trying to emphasize hitting to contact, going the other direction. It is very amusing. In 2001, the Mariners, the park factor at T-Mobile Park was almost exactly the same as it was in 2024.
Really?
Yeah.
So the hitters were just that good in 2001.
Yeah, and probably were just raking in. Now that was the 3 year weighted. I guess. Yeah, that's the 3 year weighted. So.
So for the Mariners to be good, they just need all-time great players.
Yeah.
I guess that's the funny part about it is, I mean, some of those players signed with the Mariners as free agents, right? In fact, many of them did.
Yes, although like the run suppression element of T-Mobile Park was not as well
We
known, I
didn't
think, by
know,
that point.
but it didn't affect them
It
necessarily, but
also played somewhat differently at that point because in the early two, in the first whatever 10 years, 15 years the T-Mobile Park existed, a higher part a percentage of the run suppression was the marine layer and the difficulty hitting home runs. So if you had contact hitters like an Ichiro, like a John Olerud, like an Edgar Martinez, those players took less advantage. Now what's happened is they moved the fences in, so it's easier to hit home runs, but there's less territory for defenders to cover, which is another reason that it's tough for hitters.
there's almost no answer for this, right?
I don't think there's a good solution in, unless they are to actually transport the ballpark.
I mean, build a dome. So if you're the Mariners, the way that you'd basically to play to this would be to try to find contact hitters as much as possible, or is that wrong? Or is it all power hitters that they should be looking for?
I don't know if there's a good answer to this.
Because I did see basically when you look at the, I think it was the Fangraphs projections, right? Like the weighted runs created plus for the Mariners was pretty good, right? It was something like six in the
It
MLB.
was outstanding. Not just good, it was
However,
outstanding.
it was outstanding. However, the amount of home runs was lower than almost all of the teams that were around them.
That's interesting because they like very much were reliant on home runs last season. So if you look at 2001 specifically, the Mariners hitters were not dramatically affected by playing home and road. They were very good both ways. They were better on the road, but not dramatically. But the Mariners pitching at home with 3.04 ERA, road 4.05 ERA.
Really?
So we're talking a run per game.
Well, how did they get it? So basically, they just had the perfect, they almost randomly found themselves with the perfect offense for Safeco Field.
Probably, yeah. At that point, yeah.
And they haven't been able to recreate it since.
And again, the perfect offense for say for T-Mobile Park is no longer the same as it was then because the ballpark is different.
But what is the perfect offense for T-Mobile Park? We don't know.
I don't know. Again, in a
The
world
Mariners
where,
also don't know.
well, very much they don't. So, yeah, if you're gonna have the park effects hit affect the other team and not affect you, that's a great recipe. I recommend it.
Well, but you could basically, if you know you're playing half your games there, the thinking is, yes, it's going to affect both teams, but you have a roster that is constructed better for the ballpark. But I think it's mostly that they just don't know the answer to what is better for the ballpark.
And because there's so many factors, there just may not be an answer.
There's at least four different factors, so it might be like this thing helps one player, but another factor hurts that player.
Exactly.
And it all coalesces to it sucks for every hitter.
But spring training is coming. The Mariners popped up their spring training game opener popped up on my
What
ESPN
day is that?
scoreboard for the first time today, February 21st.
Hello, that's coming up soon. That's
It is
18
coming up
days from
soon.
now. Oh yeah. Despite all of this, I am ready for baseball. It's sort of just like almost like a punch in the gut. I don't know, being a Mariners fan, where it's like offense is fun. Objectively, a better offensive team than a defensive team is fun, right? And it's like, even if the team ends up with very good players, you cannot have that. No matter what, this team is destined because of the ballpark to be a pitching team, right?
I mean, pitching can be fun too.
I agree that pitching could be fun, but it's less fun. It's interesting that somebody like Julio was willing to sign. I understand. I mean, he basically, if the Mariners wanted to, committed almost his entire career here. And I wonder if that's something that he was hot and playing well when it happened. But when we talk about these bounce backs that we're expecting a lot of the roster to have on offense, right?
I think Julio is number one on the list without
I mean,
question.
where were they at? Obviously, the full season of Rosarena as well, full season of Robles. Where were the Mariners in weighted run created plus last year, WRC plus?
I think you're about league average, maybe a little below.
So they're expected to get significantly better
Correct.
this year. I'm kind of fascinated to see how that happens with the ballpark factors as well. And obviously they're going to play half the games on the road too, so we'll see. And Julio's done it before. I don't know. I don't know what to make of it, basically.
Yeah, I don't know. It exists somewhere, but I don't have the time to look it up right now. They were around average.
I mean, that's the other thing with Polanco, where it's basically like, is what happened more of a T-Mobile factor than it is a Jorge Polanco factor?
He was better on the road. He was not as good on the road as he had been overall in previous seasons. So hopefully it's small sam combination of small sample size and health.
And I guess that would be my concern is basically, I'm sure that obviously the Fangraphs projections are projecting this as well. They know about the ballpark factor.
They are aware of it, yes. All right, Seattle Kraken split their last two, have two more games on this homestand before traveling to Calgary Saturday for their final game before the NHL breaks. No All-Star game this year as the league hosts the Four Nations face-off involving Canada, USA, Finland, and Sweden. Newly acquired Finn Kaapo-Kakko is the only Kraken player on our roster for the Four Nations event. Some injury news. Center Yanni Gourde underwent surgery for a sports hernia, expected to miss 5 to 7 weeks for the Kraken. All right, Seattle Sounders beat Danish side Aalborg BK 5-3 during a friendly played with 3 45-minute halves in Marbella, Spain. Starters scored twice, Pedro de la Vega in the 42nd minute and Albert Rusnak in the 54th minute. New group rotated in after 65 minutes, and Jesus Ferreira set up Snyder Brunel of Tacoma Defiance for a goal in the 77th minute. Ferreira then scored his first Sounders goal in the 103rd, and Obed Vargas capped the scoring for the Sounders in the 134th. Per Sounder at heart, the Sounders used a 3-4-2-1 formation with both their first and second groups, with Nuhu starting as a center back and Alex Roldan and Paul Ariola as wing backs. Definitely something we'll see a lot of this season. Brian Schmetzer has talked about maybe going back and forth between that and a more traditional and a two, putting two forwards up front so that they can play Ferreira alongside Jordan Morris. Seattle Storm, other than signing Lou Uiuru, who was acquired officially as part of that trade that we talked about last week with Las Vegas Aces and Los Angeles Sparks on Saturday when free agency officially opened and teams could begin signing players. That's the only move we've seen so far from the Storm. A couple of the players we've talked about, notably Courtney Vandersloot, went back to Chicago to play for the Sky, her original WNBA team, instead of coming home to Seattle. Natisha Heidemann was someone who had been linked to the Storm. She re-signed with the Minnesota Lynx. So, a couple of options off the table there. And it does get, start to get down to it pretty quickly. I think, a couple more wings who would be pretty logical targets for the Storm, particularly with their shooting, addressing their biggest weakness, would be the return of Alicia Clark to Seattle. That would be very exciting to see with Sammy Whitcomb's departure, the two of them, both Seattle fixtures who left after the 2020 championship. And then Tiffany Hayes, who played with Alicia Clark in Las Vegas last season and won the Sixth Player of the Year award, probably the best pure shooting guard on the market. And like you look at the Storm roster right now, that's the need for them. Although, I think they could acquire, like Alicia Clark is more of a 3-4. They could acquire that a player like that and then play, Gabby Williams more as a two. It's more about where they can get shooting than necessarily strictly a shooting guard. So stay tuned on that one.
Okay. Are they, I mean, obviously these were losses, not signing these free agents that we talked about before. Are they a worse team right now? Or is this transaction, how important is whatever they do with this chunk of money right now?
I mean, it also depends on who they draft. But yeah, I mean, I think at this point, you're talking about downgrading talent-wise from having Jewell Loyd at shooting guard, unquestionably.
Okay.
And it will still be a little tricky. Oh, I guess I buried the lead here. It didn't come as anyone surprise to anyone, but Shea Ogwumike broke the news on SportsCenter that her sister NECA has committed to re-signing with the Storm. That deal is not official, which suggests to me that both sides are kind of waiting to figure out what happens financially, before they decide, what her salary is going to be for this season. Possible that's also the case with Gabby Williams, is the Storm's core player. Have not heard anything about her taking meetings with any other team. And I reported in the news story on NECA re-signing that Williams is expected to be back as well. So, probably waiting for a while on the exact dollar figures. Like, I gotta figure if you're gonna land Alicia Clark or Tiffany Hayes at this stage, given the Golden State Valkyries have basically all their cap is left open. There's a few other teams with significant cap space. Like you're probably talking max type money for either of those two players.
Are
So,
either of them worth it right now?
I mean,
Max time money.
I offered Alicia Clark the Supermax in our
Oh,
mock free
wow.
agency, not as the Storm, because I had used up my cap elsewhere, but is the Dallas Wings, I did so. So, yeah, I think so.
Okay. I mean, that, I guess that
I
changes
mean,
things. If they
we
sign
haven't.
Alicia Clark to max money, are they as good as they were with Jewel? Obviously, pending the draft pick, but still
Well,
worse.
probably not. You're a lot closer to it. I mean, especially then if you're plugging in Olivia Miles or Paige Bueckers into the lineup, now you can talk about maybe the depth that you've added can
If it's Paige
outweigh the
Bueckers, who
top
cares about
end.
anything else?
Yeah, I mean, if it's Paige Bueckers,
That's
yes.
like, I don't, you can't just say Olivia Miles or Paige Bueckers. It's like,
Yes.
is there something that I don't know here?
No.
Okay. The amount that you've talked about Paige Bueckers as if it's a real thing is
Oh,
very surprising to me.
well, we didn't talk about this.
Oh, hello.
So Sue Bird on her podcast, A Touch with Megan Rapinoe, A Touch More, qu quoted my discussion of the Storm's trade and the possibility of Paige Bueckers being involved, and made very clear in the clip to like say these are my Kevin Pelton's words, not Sue Bird's words, because Sue Bird is part of the Storm's ownership group, so doesn't want to be accused of tampering with a player who is not declared for the draft as of yet, still has remaining college eligibility. But Megan Rapinoe kind of shot down this idea, was like, oh, there's no way that Paige Bueckers could actually threaten to go back to college for another year. And Sue said, I want to make sure I'm not quoting her exactly on this, but I could see a world, or I could see it happening, something along those lines. So there you go. I
Am I
look,
Megan Rapinoe in this situation?
I mean, clearly in the construct of this
I've
podcast, I'm
poo-pooed
the
this
Sue
idea.
and
I've
you're the
poo-pooed this
Megan
idea
Rapinoe.
more than just hair-wise, even. But I don't know what the person like Sue and Megan's personalities are on the podcast. Is it all takes Megan Rapinoe?
No, not really. But Sue is definitely like, she's the one who's bringing the notes and research, and Megan's just reacting a lot of the
Wow. Burying the lead that I don't do the notes and research. No one could
time,
have figured that out.
I think.
Burying the lead. I don't, that's not quite right.
Breaking the news, I believe.
Breaking the news.
I mean, look,
Okay.
that doesn't mean it's going to happen. I'm just saying, like, is there a better chance of that, or was there a better chance of the Storm winning the lottery when Caitlin Clark was in it last year? I'd say there might be a better chance of them trading for Paige Beckers than that.
What were the literal odds?
I think it was like 15%. So, I mean, I don't think it's 50% that they could get Paige Beckers, but oh, they were 10%. think it's
10%.
better than 10% that they could end up with the number one pick? Yeah. I mean, Dallas has had an interesting offseason. Satu Sabally requested a trade. She ended up going to Phoenix. Natasha Howard also left, but they did manage to add Nelissa Smith in that trade, the Sabally trade, and then they subsequently struck a sign and trade with Connecticut to bring in Dejanay Carrington. So that was a really nice pickup for the Wings.
Is the Wings ownership complete? They're completely separate from the Mavericks, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Do you feel like this is, might be a strange question to tie these two things, but is there any chance that the Luka situation affects a
No.
decision about Paige Beckers?
There is no chance of that.
But basically, is there, let's say that Paige Beckers is like, do you think that seeing the fallout of the Luka trade shows the Dallas Wings ownership group that we can't be known as the people who let Paige Beckers go, that it would be better to call her bluff?
I mean, no, because the whole point is that clearly Dallas, the Mavericks, did this without Luka Doncic wanting out, with Luka Doncic wanting to stay.
But it's
The
the public perception, please.
Wings aren't going to make this trade because of the fact that they think they can get better value with the number two pick if they make this trade,
Okay.
which they probably are, but we'll see. Or, you know, women's basketball was pretty competitive Sunday in Columbus against the number eight team in the country. We're down five entering the fourth quarter, but shot just 4 of 12 in the final period of a 66-56 loss to Ohio State. Not enough offense outside Hannah Steins, who had 17 points, and 13 from Delia Daniels, who added 4 blocks. Xavier Sellers went 2 of 19 from the field, 1 of 10 from three, and Elle Ladin was 1 of 8, 1 of 6 from three, though Ladin did have 11 rebounds. Huskies were still the last team in is of Friday's bracketology update on ESPN.com, and my colleague Charlie Cream. Don't think a loss to Ohio State would affect that, but Huskies pretty desperately need a win on Wednesday at Penn State to snap this stretch with 5 losses in their last 6 games. They're favored by 1 at BortTorvik.com over the number 65 ranked Nittany Lions, who are 1 in 10 in Big Ten play, but did manage to take down Ohio State at home 2 weeks ago. Only one conference loss so far to a team ranked lower than 37th by Bart Torvik, but that one was a doozy. They lost 77-73 at home last Sunday to a Rutgers team that was previously winless in conference and ranks number 111 overall. On the flip side, Ohio State is Penn State's only win over a top 80 team all year. So again, this is one the Huskies should win if they're a tournament team. They're back home Sunday to take on number 16 Maryland. The Terps started 14-0 with wins over Duke, Michigan State, and Iowa, but lost guard Bree McDaniel to an ACL tear last month, and have gone 1-5 without her, albeit partially because star forward Cheyenne Sellers also missed 2+ games before returning. Wing Kaylin Smichael leads the team with 17.3 points per game, while Sellers is at 14 points per game, and McDaniel was their third leading scorer before her injury. UW men's basketball does have a second Big Ten win now to their credit, and a first Big Ten road win, 71-68 Saturday at Minnesota. They've already got more road wins than football had all season. Huskies led this one by 10 at halftime, but the Gophers rallied to tie the game at 64 with 2:44 remaining, behind a huge second half from star Dawson Garcia, who had 28 points. Great Osabor scored the next 3 points of the game, and Minnesota didn't score again until getting a quick two with 12 seconds left. DJ Davis made 2 free throws to push the lead back to 3, and the Huskies successfully fouled up 3 with Garcia missing both attempts. Did you watch this one? Or would, yeah. Did you catch this at the 9 a.m. start?
Absolutely, I caught it. I caught every single second of it.
Okay, there you go. You just weren't weighing in.
I was reading the asides on Discord. You didn't used to give A pluses, or you did used to give A pluses, and now you don't?
I
What
was shocked.
changed? What changed?
I didn't even remember that I used to give A pluses.
You know, I always say that I don't do New Year's resolutions because if you're trying to get better every single day, you shouldn't
Wow.
make a New Year's resolution.
I love
Every
the
day is like New Year's for me. And that's what happened to
Can't wait
you.
to see that in the Pelton quotes section of the
You can't call it out. It has to happen naturally.
Discord.
But is that what happened to you? You were just constantly trying to get better and you were thinking about it and you were like, A plus, that doesn't even make sense. An
No,
A is a perfect grade. That's like
because
an F minus. Come on.
I would remember having that thought, and I have no idea that I previously thought the other way. I thought this way all along.
Maybe I'm not trying to give all takes. Maybe I just don't remember any of the previous takes.
Well, call me. I mean, I guess you have been giving takes for 10 years on this podcast.
Yeah.
We're now into
Or.
our third, like from the start of the podcast in 2013, where this is 13 different years, inclusive of both ends and inclusive of the period of time when we had a falling out.
Some people think that's real.
but you got to think about how long I've been grading trades at ESPN. I've graded a lot of trades, man.
Created a lot of fucking trades.
I have seen some shit.
Anyway, 9 a.m. basketball. Yep, I watched it all.
You have any takeaways?
I'd still like this team. It's one of those things. It's funny how similar they are to the UW football team that I have. There have been teams like previous UW basketball teams where I'm like, I just hate this team. Like the players seem like nice people. They're fine. I want no business with it. But overall, I feel like there's something happening right now with this roster, and it doesn't necessarily take that much. Having Kepnong back, letting Great play off ball a little bit. Why am I not remembering the tall, small forward from Portland?
Taylor Harris.
Tyler Harris. I was like, Tyler Williams. I really like Tyler Harris, and he had an awesome game in this one. Like seeing Tyler Harris progress, I think there was a thing where people were talking about the future. This might have been on the Discord, I don't remember. But they're talking about Zoom possibly leaving after the season and going out and getting big money in NIL. I'm just like, I don't think I would necessarily assume that's going to be the case. It might be. I think it really depends on what kind of money is out there, but
I
why?
understand the cynicism. I mean, one of the things that's tough to know is like how different things are going to be in terms of continuity under Danny Sprinkle as compared to Mike Hopkins. Like, is there going to be more focus on using the NIL money that they clearly do have to retain players rather than to go out and get new ones?
Why not both?
I mean, because you have to divide it. Like, decisions have to be made.
Then, okay, so
But
if
I'm
that is
saying
the
we don't
case.
necessarily know that it's like everyone was like, I mean, also a certain factor apparently with Keon Mennefield Jr. was his academic standing, perhaps, is he is no longer playing at Arkansas, is now in the G League. So.
I guess what I'm saying is I think there's more to it, as specifically the Keon Mennefield situation that you're talking about, right? There's more to it. I wouldn't just go into this assuming this offseason that Zoom won't be back. And there'll be
I mean,
demand,
I think
obviously.
it's
There's
actually a
demand.
good idea to just assume that everyone won't be back, and if they do, be pleasantly surprised.
The fact that he recommitted to the team through, because he was committed to Mike Hopkins and then recommitted to the team under Danny Sprinkle, I think shows a level of commitment to the program. It probably depends on the kind of money that's out there and whether UW can match it. But also, UW can match it. Any team could always pay Zoom more,
I
but
mean,
there's
they
also.
got one of the most coveted players transfers in the country in Greide Osibor.
I mean, and they also didn't. They had the inside track to him because of Danny Sprinkle's relationship with Great, but they also paid him probably what was fair market value or whatever,
Unquestionably, yeah.
close to the top that anybody else was willing
I
to.
don't think they got a sprinkle discount on that one. And
So.
that money will now, be available next season.
I just, unless Zoom is like, if he was having the kind of season that would be like an instant, he's going to go to one of the five best programs in the country, then sure, I would assume that's the case. But I kind of feel like Danny Sprinkle's building something here right now. And the way that you build in college is not necessarily with the same players year over year, but I do think bringing a handful of these guys back could be important. And he will. You know, like the assumption that the team is going to be completely different next year is a wrong assumption, in my opinion. But Tyler Harris, to me, more than almost anybody, is somebody who I'm most excited about for next season if he's still at UW and beyond that, because I feel like he could really grow into a really good player. And I just see him and I'm like, how did he end up at Portland? Like, what transpired to get a person with that skill set and with that size to Portland is kind of shocking to me.
It's a great question. I don't really know the answer.
Where's he from?
Definitely California. I don't remember whether it's Northern or Southern California.
He looks like an NBA player to me in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think, being strong defensively is going to be kind of the biggest question mark for Harris if you project ahead to the pro game, but his combination of length and shooting ability is NBA caliber.
He also like you said with length,
East
he
Bay.
looks like an NBA player when you see him play.
So he is
And
from Northern California, East Bay.
so Tyler Harris to me is somebody who I'm most excited about, and the way that he played in this game against Minnesota, that they held them off. This was a good win. Any Big Ten road win is a good win.
100%.
So I am holding out hope. I think UW is going to, and UCLA's played quite well, right? I mean, they crush Oregon over the weekend.
UCLA is up to number 27 on KenPom. They have now won five in a row since that
Because
four-game losing streak to
that was the
start
one
January.
that I'd circled basically as like, this is a must-win game that I think UW can win of all of these Big Ten games that have happened. That was the one that felt like it was the most likely for a victory. But I think we kind of ran into UCLA when they were extraordinarily hot or about to get extraordinarily hot.
Well, that brings us to this week, which is an important homestand for them against the two weakest teams that they have faced so far at home in Big Ten play, or at least in this stretch of Big Ten play. USC actually was lower ranked than either of these two teams when they fa who they faced back in December. But
I love breaking. UCLA Hoops doesn't get its respect despite win streak. What is breaking about
I guess that they weren't ranked. I don't know. As we look
Thanks,
at kind of the,
SI.
if we look at kind of the bigger picture element, Minnesota now the lowest ranked big team in the Big Ten. Both the Golden Gophers and Huskies are projected by KenPom to go 5-15 on average, with three teams, Northwestern, Penn State, and Rutgers, projected at 7-13 on average. Huskies have to surpass two other teams besides Minnesota to reach the 15-team Big Ten tournament. I think I've said 14 in the past. That is wrong. That's a 15-team tournament.
Wait, so
So
I thought it was only two teams who didn't make it. It's three?
three.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Okay.
So coming up on Wednesday, they host Nebraska. The Cornhuskers are 4-7 in Big Ten play. They lost six straight in January, but bounced back to beat Illinois at home in overtime, then upset Oregon in Eugene on Sunday. It's the return for Braxton Mia, the homecoming game. He started all but one game he's played, but not averaging a ton of minutes this season. Nebraska doesn't look like a great matchup for the Huskies because their extreme focus on taking away the paint. 49% of opponent shots are threes in the nation's top five, although the Huskies have been competitive against the other teams that allow a lot of threes. They've played against Nevada, Purdue, and UCLA being at the top of that list among major conference opponents. I guess Nevada isn't technically a major conference opponent, but they're that caliber. Northwestern is 3-8, meaning the Huskies could potentially pull even with them in the Big Ten standings with a home win.
Do we know what the tiebreakers are there? If because they're going to be teams tied.
I'm sure it's head to head to start.
So I mean that makes this a doubly important game, the same way that Minnesota was as well.
Correct. All three of those wins for the Wildcats are at home. They've lost three in a row, including hosting Rutgers last Wednesday. This Northwestern team really good at taking care of the ball and forcing turnovers. So if the Huskies can kind of, play even from a turnover standpoint, I think they've got a real chance to get the win here. That one is coming up on Saturday night at 7:30. All right.
Okay. I mean, this could be a two-win weekend for the Huskies. And if it is, it puts them in a much better position to try to make. I mean, it's funny that that's the goal that we're looking at is the Big Ten tournament.
It
It's
is
like
the goal. Yeah.
Luca keeps asking me, and children are like, are the Huskies mathematically eliminated from the tournament? And I'm like, No.
It's gonna take a long time till we get to that point.
I just like for a tournament that is selected by human beings being mathematically eliminated, it's just like
Oh, from
they're,
the NCAA tournament?
yeah. I mean, the once they are mathematically elim if they are mathematically eliminated from the Big Ten tournament, then they're probably eliminated from the NCAA tournament. But
Going
like,
to
you
go
can't
ahead
be
and say that.
mathematically eliminated. It's not like breaking Huskies mathematically eliminated from a tournament that's selected by people. I mean, I look at this upcoming stretch and, you know, the games aren't easy, but there are a lot of winnable games in a row.
Well, despite the fact that there is snow on the ground in Fairwood, and there was here on the coast when I was writing these notes, it is spring sports season, and UW softball is headed to Tucson this weekend for the Candrea Classic, where they'll face number 11 Alabama and number 16 Arizona, the hosts twice apiece, along with a game against Western Michigan. You'll recall the Huskies have just four returning players after their heavy transfer turnover, headlined by Pac-12 all-freshman pick Gisele Alvarez. Also, some UW softball related news. Heather Tarr stepped down from her role as head coach of the USA national softball team ahead of the college season. Some unexpected UW football news on Monday is
Oh,
offensive
okay. I
coordinator
was like,
Brent.
wait, what? I thought you were breaking this to
Breaking. UW football doesn't get the respect it deserves. No.
me.
Brendan Carroll is leaving UW to join Pete Carroll's staff
Don't know. I
with the
guess this
Raiders.
it's unexpected mostly just because we didn't think that much about it.
It's unexpected because Pete Carroll was in the NFL previously. Like Steve Belichick going to join Bill Belichick. Okay, we get it. Steve was with Bill Belichick his entire time in New England. You know, not Bill Belichick's entire time in New England. He was a child for part of that. But, you know, Steve Belichick had only ever worked under Bill Belichick, and then Bill Belichick wasn't working. So yeah, as soon as he got a
Had to go find
job,
a
you were
job.
like,
Yeah. I
but
think
Brendan
there's.
Carroll has spent, I think, more time in his coaching career apart from Pete than he has with Pete. I'd have to do the math.
If your dad is assembling a brand new staff, it feels like your chances of being on that staff are pretty high.
I mean, obviously, like I assumed that
It's.
if Brendan Carroll had wanted the job, he could have had it, but he's kind of done his own thing. And that thing has lately been with Jed Fish throughout Fish's entire tenure as a head coach. So I was surprised by it. He'll be the offensive line gate coach and run game coordinator for the Raiders under Pete Carroll.
This is fine. This is
I
fine
agree.
news.
I mean, the offensive coordinator title, we're not in the meetings. We don't know how much of the weekly prep he's handling. He is not calling plays. Jed Fish does that. So it is very similar, I think, to the turnover that we've seen among offensive coordinators on Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan's staff, where those coaches graduate to jobs where they get to be
Duval.
head coaches.
Did I already complain about this last week? I think I did, about how people assume that Shoddy's going to be a bad coach, and Liam
Yes.
Cohen, just like as if press conferences are what win games.
I mean, Nick Sirianni's opening press conference wasn't super great, and
I thought people
here he is
kind of
coaching
thought
his
Dan
second.
Campbell was a joke.
Oh, yeah,
You know,
100%.
people were like, the kneecap thing, in hindsight, it seems cool. But at the time, I was
Oh,
like,
yeah.
oh my God.
You didn't come out of that press conference being like, hey, this guy is going to follow the analytics on fourth downs more than any
No,
other coach in the NFL.
absolutely not.
No. So quarterback coach Jimmy Doherty has been promoted, will become offensive coordinator, with assistant offensive line coach Michael Switzer getting a promotion to replace Carroll's position coach duties.
It makes a lot of sense. I mean, Jimmy Doherty is the position coach for by far the most important player on the team. And it, having that position again, he's not going to be calling plays, but having a heavier role in the offense makes a lot of sense to me. For somebody who's going to be working with DeMond, who not just, you know, he is involved in the pass game, but like DeMond Williams also is maybe rushing option number one as well. So he's just going to
Well,
have the ball in his hands a
let's remain
lot.
calm. Jonah Coleman still exists.
DeMond Williams is going to have a lot of carries next year.
Going to have a high usage rate.
So, I mean, like that game, the bowl game against Louisville, like, I think Jonah Coleman, I would love for Jonah Coleman to have a massive year. I think his impact is a little bit reduced, and hopefully DeMond running will open things up for Jonah Coleman.
That is my
But,
hope.
you know, let me see. What was the usage in that game? Because
I mean, partially also, they were rotating in younger backs in that one. I don't know that we can look at that as necessarily a template for the 2025 season.
And they were playing a little bit behind. So they had to, they had to pass the ball quite a bit toward the end. But let me see here. Let me pull up the box score. 9 carries for John Coleman. I don't know if they were working in young backs that much. It
I
was nine
guess.
carry, 5 for Adam Muhammad for 5 yards, which is crazy. That's not going to happen again. But like, they're still going to have to get Adam Muhammad those carries next year. And Jordan Washington had 2 for 3 yards. Damone Williams had 20 carries in the game. Obviously, sacks are included in there, but Damone Williams is going to have his hands on the ball. Obviously, he's the quarterback. He is going to be either the ball carrier or the passer on like 80% of the team's plays.
I'd have to do some research before I commented on that number specifically, but I agree it is going to be a high number.
So, Damone Williams is going to be touching the ball
I mean,
next
the one
year.
interesting question here is whether the Huskies would have waited to fill that offensive line role potentially with Scott Huff, who it seems is likely going to be out with the Seahawks as part of this transition from Ryan Grubb to Clint Kubiak.
Do you think that that means that because the offensive coordinator title isn't open, that Scott Huff, I mean, there's probably a chance he goes to Bama, right?
It would seem plausible. So Ryan Grubb has officially been announced as Alabama's offensive coordinator, bumping down Jamarcus Shepherd and Nick Sheridan, who held co-offensive coordinator titles last year.
They kind of just reset it as if last season didn't happen, which maybe a lot of parties want that to be the case. Maybe all parties.
Not Georgia's a party.
What?
I guess Georgia, yeah, Georgia's a party. Yeah, I'm stand by that.
I'm talking about Alabama and Ryan Grubb.
I understand, yes.
It's so funny to me that these two, the Nepo hires that the team had, right? The staff was so highly made up of legendary coaches' children, both gone. And overall, I mean, there's not really a replacement for Brendan Carroll necessarily as explicitly as there was for Steve Belichick, but neither of their position groups were very good last year. And to me, the stuff that
I
Jed did
mean,
overall was the most successful of all the things. I mean, look, Damone Williams was the most successful of everything, and it's hard to isolate talent versus,
coaching.
yeah, versus
Yeah, I
coaching.
mean, Brendan Carroll took over an offensive line where they had like too few scholarship players to actually run drills during spring practice.
I'm
So I think
accepting
Brendan
all of
Carroll
this
did
information.
just great with the offensive line, all things considered.
But also, Brendan Carroll, they weren't good. Like,
No, but again, they should have been even worse probably than they were, all by all rights.
I don't know.
Talent is what matters.
I agree that talent is what matters, but therefore, what I'm saying is that, okay, like Brendan Carroll and Steve Belichick weren't so important that they were more important than talent. There are
I
some
agree.
coaches in the world who probably are, but it's as of right now, it was neither of these two coaches. So I wish Brendan Carroll all the best in the way that I wish Pete Carroll more than all the best.
Do you wish
I
Chip
wish
Kelly all the best?
absolutely I do.
Never thought I'd see the
I looked, just wait.
I don't know if this does qualify as a just wait situation.
If you want to be a hater, just wait.
Fair.
Sometimes on yourself, even you can also wait until you don't hate that thing anymore.
Just doing a lot of waiting over there.
Time is the greatest hater, but for Chip Kelly, as somebody who he was probably enemy number one in the hate for a while, even through NFL all the way to the 49ers, and now I was like, damn, the Seahawks didn't get Chip Kelly.
You saw him do his work with Jake Bobo and Zach Charbonnet, and you were like, I'm in.
Were you not in?
I
Think about
wasn't
that.
not
The
in.
UCLA, that team was good.
I agree they were good.
It is UCLA is not an easy place to have a good team and a good offense like that. You have to give Chip a lot of credit.
I think Chip is a, like, we'll see about the NFL level. I just think there's an enormous difference between the college level and the NFL level. And I think Ryan Grubb was the latest indicator of that.
It is so different, though. Like, you cannot. Ryan Grubb had never called plays at the NFL level. Chip Kelly was a
I
head
got it.
coach multiple times.
I'm aware of the information.
And also, there's a difference between calling plays at Ohio. This wasn't Ryan Day was also calling plays. This was Chip Kelly's offense at Ohio State that was an NFL style offense that was dominant, especially through the playoff. It was dominant on offense in a way that Ryan Grubb honestly could never. This is not anything negative about Kalen DeBoer or Ryan Grubb. Chip Kelly is better. Chip Kelly is a better offensive play caller than those two are. And he's been doing this shit for like 20 years, dog. Chip Kelly invented this shit. Oregon doesn't exist without Chip Kelly.
Wow.
Mike Bellotti leaves and they're gone. They're nothing. Chip Kelly ushered in. Mike Bellotti stepped away because of how good Chip Kelly was. Do you not remember this?
I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily the way I would describe it, but yes, he's like
Mike
he did a
Bellotti
good
is
job of.
nothing. He is nothing. It was Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly made those fuckers. And then he turned around and he whipped their ass.
I think Kenny Wheaton would have some thoughts on
I'm
that.
telling you, the longevity of it. There's a longevity to it. In the same way, like if Mark Few leaves Gonzaga, Gonzaga's done as a
I
program. They're finished.
do not agree with that assessment necessarily, but
They're finished already.
also
I
the
watched them
real,
against St. Mary's over the weekend. Time is the best hater, baby.
well, I mean, Arizona's not having the greatest season right now, but I think the successor to Mark Few and maybe a key component to his success is, was Tommy Lloyd.
Oh, Tommy Lloyd's the Chip Kelly to Mark
Yes.
Few's Mike Bellotti. Got
Or to my Mark Few's Ryan Day, I don't know.
it. It's
The
complicated.
analogy is tortured at this point.
Anyway.
Anyways, Seahawks coaching movement. Clint Kubiak is bringing quarterback coach Andrew Janaco and offensive line coach John Benton with him from New Orleans. Seahawks quarterback coach Charles London previously took the same role with the Jets on Sunday under new offensive coordinator Tanner Engstrand. My ESPN colleague Jeremy Fowler reported that Seahawks will retain wide receiver coach Frisman Jackson. Coming off Jackson Smith Njigba's breakout season. Very troublingly, Andrew Janaco, he's not quite as young as Grant Udinski, but he's 36 years old and has been coaching quarterback somehow since 2021 with the
He's been a coach
Viking
since 2011.
with the Vikings, Bears, and then the Saints. He previously connected with Kubiak with the Vikings. So Benton, a much more experienced NFL coach who previously worked under not only Clint Kubiak, but also Gary Kubiak back in the
There we
day
go.
with the Houston Texans as an offensive line coach.
Andrew Janaco, huh?
There you go.
I feel like it would have been more fun if he was somebody who is a quarterback from like the 2000s that we could be like, could we not have hired Mark Brunell for this job? What did Mark Brunell end up doing? Did he get a promotion with the, or was he looking at maybe going to the Jets?
Obviously Tanner Engstrand was looking at going to the Jets. Have they announced the Lions offensive coordinator yet? I don't know about that because it was supposedly between Brunell. Oh, John Morton has got the OC job there.
So Mark Brunell's still quarterback's coach of the Lions.
Apparently so.
There
That
have to
was.
be other 90s quarterbacks who could have had this job. 2000s quarterbacks.
As quarterback coach?
Yeah.
I mean, probably.
The Lions staff proved all you need is a bunch of players from the 90s and the 2000s. You could be like, oh, remember him when you see them on Hard Knocks? That is a formula for success, people.
There you go.
It worked. It
Well,
worked.
the Seahawks will not be following that particular formula this time around.
Andrew Janaco. We're going to be talking about him being interviewed for head coaching jobs in a couple of years.
I hope so, because it means the Seahawks offense is doing well. Kubiak's successful.
We're cheering for Pete Carroll, right? It's just really a fun combination that they have in Vegas. Pete Carroll with the Raiders, Marshawn Lynch. I'm excited about it
John
overall.
Harbaugh is a rival. Jim
Yeah.
Harbaugh, I should say, is a rival. I suppose John Harbaugh potentially too, but mostly Jim.
I can't wait for it. This is going it's going to intersect with the Seahawks somehow. That is what I know. At somehow, some way, Pete Carroll has his guys, and a lot of those guys are still in the building in Seattle, and somehow, some way, it's going to happen. And we'll see what happens with Ashton Jeanty. I could just so imagine how excited Pete Carroll was about him.
I mean, the amazing thing is that it intersected with UW before it intersected with the Seahawks.
Yeah, it's fun.
So, all right.
All right.
Well, we may not have a podcast next week as I will be on vacation. If we do, it will be very late in the week. So we'll kind of play it by ear, depending on what sort of news there is in the Seattle sports world or whether we can take a rare winter bye week.
This is all news to me, so finding this out right now.
I mean, you knew that I was going on vacation.
I didn't know what the dates were of it.
Well, there you go.
I'm
So,
just going to be solo talking about Tyler Harris.
did offer you that opportunity, I think, when you when I was in Italy.
Not
And
solo. Yeah, we've missed a lot of weeks lately. You're...
look, I'm out there gallivanting.
Look. Look who's been ready to play every week.
What
52
can I
week
say?
theater.
I'm like Luka Doncic.
You're either competing or you're not. And one of us is not.
On that note,
Thanks for listening.
thanks.
I felt like I was really off today. I feel like it's the old, like yesterday, I was just seeking out. There's no more information, but I was like, I need to talk about this more.
I had multiple phone calls about it. I mean, obviously, I guess that makes sense because, I mean, one of those was to one of my ESPN colleagues, but also just, a relative. So,
A relative?
not a member of our family.
Fair enough. The. I was like, who hit you? The Italian relative? Ricky
Not
Ricky?
yet.
I don't even know how to explain this. Be like, imagine that I don't even know. that Erling Haaland was traded for just like
Oh,
soccer is
the
so
soccer
different.
analogy. People were trying to do it. I
It's such
think,
a different thing because in soccer, these players actually do change teams.
yes. I think Mbappe was the analogy I saw. Like people were trying to do the NFL version, and it just doesn't work.
I
Because
still think
like,
it's like CJ Stroud, maybe somebody like that.
no way. CJ Stroud
He's just not
didn't
good
play in
enough.
the Super Bowl last year.
Okay, well, Jayden Daniels is like the obvious one,
But
but
again, it's like Jaden Daniels, even though he has accomplished a lot, it's still primarily potential. Like it's Joe Burrow, I think, is if you're
and
going to come
Burrow.
up with a Doncic comp, is probably the best one. It's just, I don't know who the right version. I mean, part of it is like you
Myles
can't.
Garrett. Myles Garrett might make a lot of sense now. He requested a trade, and it's like
Yeah.
Myles Garrett is much, I don't know how much older than Joe
Joe
Burrow he
Burrow?
is, but like he's an older, very good defensive player. It is funny, like the AD being reduced to defensive player now, but
Yes. Very funny. He's not as much older. He's only 29 and Joe Burrow is 28. So
yeah. That's
no,
why I
it
actually feel
doesn't.
like Burrow, we've seen, I'm not convinced that Joe Burrow's like going to win an MVP.
But it's
But
re I mean, yes, he's probably not going to go into a season as the favorite as Luka Doncic has, I think, like the last two, maybe 3 years.
Joe Burrow just isn't good enough as a comparison. But anyway,
Yeah.
okay. So, like, I spent yesterday. It's so funny this process of first off, if you are a fan of A, the Lakers, B, the Blazers, C, people named Luka, like, what an incredible day I had on Saturday. Across the board, because we have the Lakers winning at MSG straight into the trade, basically, right after that. Then the Blazers beating the Suns, pretty much straight up, right? That wasn't like an empty-handed Suns team. The Blazers just beat them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the
KD
Blazers are
played,
good
Bradley
now.
Beal played, Devin Booker played. And I was like, Luka, this is a huge moment for you. I was like, Lukas in general are now about to get more famous. So he should just be cheering for Lukas around the world. But it was a great night. But then the next morning, I woke up and I was like, I felt bad for Mavericks fans, which is crazy. And I was thinking about this scenario.
Did
And
you
I
see
had,
the protest?
I saw the protest, yeah. Let me
It
ask
was
you,
quite something.
have you talked about this on any other podcasts, or is this it?
This is it.
Wow. I was thinking about that. If you're an NBA fan and you could sit around and listen to 2 hours of Ichiro slander and Pete Carroll idolatry, you can actually hear some good basketball talk. No, I don't actually want to talk. People know what your perspective is. You know what I mean? Like anybody could do that thing. That was like everybody was basically after the first initial wave of like, I thought Windy was really good to have and his level of information, because Windy just broke it down. Matter of fact, he didn't do the reaction or anything like that. He was like, here's what is like what happened. It wasn't like, oh, well, what does this mean? Both sidesism of the NBA trade that I think is the thing that happens. Windy was like, this is a shocking trade. And I think he actually kind of helped early on frame it for people.
I mean, it was like I was like everybody else when I first saw it. I texted multiple colleagues being like, did Shams get hacked? Because it seemed more plausible to me that Shams had gotten hacked than that that was a trade that had actually been made.
The when you put in our chat, you were like trade, and I was like, what are you talking? I thought DK Metcalf got traded.
I mean,
That
that
was
would be
my
an extraordinarily strange time to trade DK Metcalf on the
it was my
Saturday night before the Pro
but I
Bowl
was just like,
games.
when you were like a trade happened that would have affected me, I really didn't even consider like a big NBA trade. That didn't even kind of cross my mind. I thought for
It's
sure.
6 days before the trade deadline. What?
But no, well, like that it would matter enough
Yes, they would
that you would
like
alert me. Like if
the
De'Aaron
De'Aaron
Fox is
Fox
traded,
trade.
you're
Yeah.
not like trade. You know what I mean? You're just like you wouldn't tell me if De'Aaron Fox was traded as the next day happened and you did not inform any information of that.
That is
This was
correct.
like important enough that you inform me of it. But so then I was feeling bad for Mavericks fans, and I was thinking about Mavericks fans being pissy, being like, we're done with the league, et cetera, which again, people have every right to do that. And how many players do you feel like there have been, say, since the year 2000 that are in this same world as Luka is, right? 10, 15, maybe a little bit more.
I'd have to think on it a little bit, but it's in that ballpark. I mean, LeBron and AD, KD, certainly.
We're coming back to that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there are other ones I'm just not thinking of off the top of my head right now.
I mean,
Chris Paul might have been at
Steph
this
is an
point of
obvious
year.
one. Steph, Wemby right now.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it
Tatum
depends
is
exactly
probably
how we're
there.
describing it. I think Tatum is still a level below.
Jokic, Şengün currently, of
But I mean, the
course.
weird thing is like, yes, Halliburton. Like, even Jokic, like, by the time that everyone agreed that he was this good of a player, he was already older than Luka is now.
Yeah. Okay. So it's been a small handful. Because even if Ant was traded, it's not at the same level, right?
Correct.
There's been a small handful of players who had that same level. Think about the scenario that the Mavericks went through this weekend, which again, I empathize, I sympathize with Mavericks fans. We had not only one of those players taken away from the city of Seattle, but they took the whole fucking team too. So anybody who's talking about any level of sympathy at all for Dallas, like I get it. But this isn't like, oh, there could be a hope. They're going to keep playing games. They're probably going to make at least the play-in this year. Time is continuing to happen for Dallas. We had the exact catastrophic scenario happen. Plus, they took the team.
Well, I mean,
This should have been
if
an
you believe the
even bigger
conspiracy
story.
theories that this is
To take
the
the team.
first step to
LeBron's
getting
getting the
to the
Vegas
Boston.
team. Did get the fuck out of here. Come on. I
So,
don't buy that the NBA is going to let them have the Vegas team.
I mean, also just like, why would you move a team from Dallas, which is one of the 10 biggest cities in
No,
the country and
the
has a long
conspiracy
track
theories
record
are
of supporting the
fucking
Mavericks?
horseshit. They're
Like,
horseshit.
if you're going to move a team to Las Vegas, you're going to buy a very cheap team in a small market and then move them to Las Vegas, not the Mavericks.
But also, the NBA has basically told us that there's going to be expansion in two markets. I granted, like, that could open up a third market, but Adam Silver is not David Stern. He's not going out of his way to move teams from good markets to bad markets in this particular climate.
No,
We are
he's not.
the
Yeah.
place that we are, partially, like, thankfully to David Stern, but also negatively to David Stern. There's a reality that the best team in the NBA is in a market that no other professional sports franchise is willing to go into. And it doesn't, like, dominating that market TV wise is like yippee, but it doesn't matter. Luka Doncic being on the Lakers is more valuable than being in Dallas, which is like a top 10 TV market, not Oklahoma City, which
I don't
is like
know if I actually agree with that, but it'll be interesting to see, because I do think there is, like, you definitely want the Lakers and the Knicks to be competitive, so you're not putting, like, you know, the Knicks teams of the early 2020s or the late 2010s on national TV on a regular basis. But I do wonder if, like, having LeBron in the Lakers, it's like, well, the Lakers already existed now and LeBron was separate. Like, you can't double the Lakers TV ratings.
I still think it matters, though. Like, there was a time that the Lakers TV ratings weren't that good. Smush Parker days. People forget
I don't know if you're aware of the Smush Parker days. I don't know if you know who played for
but
the Lakers.
I'm telling you, I was
watching
Kobe
the CNN Kobe
had
documentary
that kind of gravity
when this news broke.
Kobe got more gravity later. It took post.
I think
it took
Kobe
the
had
POW
a,
championship.
Kobe had a
Kobe
pretty significant amount
more.
Of gravity when he was scoring 81 points in a game, which Smush Parker, I'm certain, started that game next to him.
There was Kobe got more famous though.
He got more famous. I'm not going to disagree with that.
But anyway, thinking about that, where I was like, you expect to have this person in your life for 10 years. I think we never got emotionally attached to Kevin Durant was the main thing. Was like,
I mean, literally,
we knew. We knew that Kevin Durant was possibly most likely going to not be on the Sonics. So we liked Kevin Durant, but we didn't care about Kevin Durant in the way that we could have cared about Kevin Durant and that Mavericks fans cared about Luka.
I mean, literally the day after his first home game in Seattle was when Clay Bennett said the team is going to move.
Yeah. But I went and bought a jersey the night he was drafted, and I've never done that with a single other player.
I think the other thing is, and I was talking about this with this person about the LeBron in LA versus Kobe in LA, like, there's a value in kind of seeing the journey. And we saw the start of the journey with Kevin Durant, but we didn't get to see the whole journey. So, you know, if the Sonics had moved after Durant won his first MVP, like, it would have been a totally different level of regret and frustration, even than the high amount that existed.
Yep. But there, I was just thinking about, like, so you expect to have this person in your life.
Wow. Did you know that Smush Parker was the second highest scorer for the Lakers in the 81 point game?
Love
Do
him.
You know how many points Smush Parker scored?
12?
13. Very, 13. Very close. Chris Mim had 12. They were the three Lakers in double figures.
The other piece was basically just like, you expect this person to be your life for 10 years as a fan. You know what I mean? You expect, like, I think about Russell Wilson after his rookie season or something like that, where it was like Russ reached higher heights faster than Luka did. And also his career probably faded probably faster than we expect Luka's career to, because he had the whole period of college. You know, like, Russ came into the league much older. He probably was 23 his rookie year.
Yeah, he might have been 24 by the end of it.
He was pretty
close. He was almost as old as Bo Nix.
But he was, like, closer in age to Luka now. Right?
Yeah.
Whereas we already have this long history with Luka. And that's the difference, I think, between the NBA and the NFL as well. Like, but with a quarterback and with somebody
Russ
like that.
Turned 24 during his rookie year.
So even age-wise, because Luka's 25.
About to turn 26, but yes.
You just are like, I'm going to have this person in my life for the next 10 years. And the way that you think about professional sports and the, like, I know it's stupid. I get it. You know, it's fucking sports. Who cares? But it just leaves a hole in your life when that's a thing that you're thinking. You know, it's like, this is just gone. This person that I expected to see this whole journey through is just gone.
It did with Russell Wilson when he got traded from Seattle, even though we went on that entire journey with him. And it was ultimately an incredibly smart trade by the Seahawks.
But it felt okay, because it was like, we're on the other side. We don't need to witness the twilight
it,
as much
it
as
it felt okay. Would you like me to spice in a clip of the emergency pod reacting to the Russell Wilson trade news?
I'll give John Schneider credit for that trade. I still think, I don't know. If the circumstances were different, I don't think Russell Wilson ages as quickly as he does. But that's the main thing, is just having that. And I was like, I feel bad for Mavericks fans. And I'm like, we had the whole team taken away, plus one of these players. One of the, like, you could only come up with like five, right? players who are in the same situation. And that person was just gone from our lives immediately. But I was listening to Simmons and Russillo, and they were like, oh, the front office. Like, there's a thing about Rob Pelinka basically like deliberating. And it's like, people inside don't think like people outside do, right?
Well,
I
I agree
don't.
with that, yeah.
Executives at teams, this is not necessarily a bad thing, but they were like, they probably hung up the phone and were like, what the fuck? Let's do this instantly. And it's like, that's not how these decisions happen, though, realistically. They did take their time because you're talking about a very large contract, human beings overall, an organization. There's so much more to consider than there is just like this person's value is greater than this person's value. And that's not how most organizations are run. Also, most teams are not thinking in the way that you probably are thinking, and the way that, say, Bill Simmons is thinking of basically like a chart of like, I'm going to an X. There are trades that teams lose overall that they are probably fine with, even if they get a worse grade for it, because there's complicated reasons to do things, if that makes sense.
I agree with
This,
that,
on the
but
other
I
hand,
would say that you should be thinking less in those terms if it's, trading PJ Tucker, et cetera, for Drew Eubanks to get under the luxury tax than if it's Luka Doncic.
this is not defending the Mavericks. This is saying, I think the Mavericks are wrong in every single perspective. This is saying, I just don't think as an organization, it does take time for the Lakers to be like, okay, what are we talking about here? More than just getting off the phone and being like, yes, done. Does that make sense? It's a
Yeah.
conversation that needs to happen, even
Well, part
if
of
it is so clear.
the reason it needs to happen is like, wait, why are they offering something that's too good to be true to us?
Yeah, no, that's all part of it. So I do think it's a little bit less like craven, but I do think it's just a complicated job to run an organization, and it takes skills that are extraordinarily diverse to have, to be able to have the personnel piece of it, and to be able to understand the salary cap. NBA salary caps are extraordinarily complicated, right?
But I don't think this is like a, one of the things I've done is revisited the previous Fs I've given in my trade grades. And the one that held up the best of those is when the Kings traded, I think, a first round pick and swap rights to the 76ers to clear salary so that they could sign. I know Marco Bellinelli was one of the players
Oh
they
my
signed,
God, I
Italian
remember that.
legend, but I
Yeah.
forget who the other one was now, lo these many years later. Although the swap ended up being from 3 to 5 in that draft, which is very funny because they swapped down from the pick that was used on Jason Tatum to the pick that was used on De'Aaron Fox. And Philadelphia, which got the 3 pick, then traded up to the number one pick and, of course, drafted Markelle Fultz.
Yep.
A lot of tentacles to that particular deal. But anyways, like that was one where Vlade Divac legitimately did not seem to understand the salary cap and the value of those picks. Like he was new to the job, didn't understand that he could have stretched whatever salary. I don't like again, I don't even remember what contract it was they sent that direction. And this is not the case with Nico Harrison. Like he's been doing this for several years. He again has made some moves that I haven't liked from a value standpoint that have worked out very well for them, and has made other moves that I have liked a considerable amount. Like I thought they had generally a pretty good offseason last year. So whatever is going on here, it's much beyond, one person being out of their depth in a role. I don't think that's a fair assessment.
You think it was just a catastrophic misunderstanding of Luka's value then?
I think, like, look, the first off, I think you want to take a lot of the explanations at face value. They had concerns about Luka Doncic's future, about his ability to stay healthy,
None of those
about
things
paying
an
him the
answer
money.
the why you don't get the most, though.
Because of the fact that they didn't want it to leak out and they wanted
Why?
Anthony Davis specifically,
Okay.
because then they felt like, they would lose control of the process to Luka Doncic. I mean, again, they were wrong, but I understand how they got there.
Do you feel like there's a short-term perspective versus a long-term perspective? Like, what was missed
Yeah.
here? Is that.
Nico Harrison said, we think this trade sets us up now and to win in the future. And then he said the next day that the future is 3 to 4 years,
That
and
they don't
10
care about
years
10
from
years.
now, we're probably going to have been fired.
Yeah, see, I mean, that's the other piece that I'm talking about with the people being good at doing one thing. Like, if you're only thinking in 3 to 4 years, you're not
But
a good
most
executive.
executives, the only 3 to 4 years.
That's not true, though.
That's
The
why the
Lakers
process
executives
worked.
didn't think in 3 to 4 years. A
No, I
lot
think
of executives
I.
are trading for picks in 2031. and shit like that.
Not as many as you think. It's like three,
So then
maybe
that's
four.
that's another situation where the outside fans, or not fans, because you're not a fan, but analysts think longer term than the people in the building.
Of course, because I'm not going to get fired over the trade. I get like why those incentives exist, but that's why, again, at a trade
But
of
he
this
also,
magnitude,
he's more likely to be fired today than he was before this.
there are many ironies of this trade. But that's where it's ownership who isn't going to be fired in 3 to 4 years, who has to step in and prevent a move like this from happening.
And the ownership just wasn't. They
And
just,
if
I feel
now,
like
if
they
you
have a
want to
hard
say that,
time.
like the inexperienced piece here is
Is the
the
owner.
ownership.
Interesting. So
And you
that
know,
you feel like it could come from
their attention
ownership.
may be a little distracted at the present time. So.
You feel like they could have been basically being like, all right, these people we've hired to do this job have been doing this job fine are telling us this is a good thing to do, so we're going to do it. All right, that makes sense. Do you have any other thoughts about this? I feel like everybody
I
has
don't
kind of
think
the
it's that
same
interesting to
perspective.
talk about the trade. I want to talk
It's
about the things around the trade.
what are the
So the
things
other thing
around the
that
trade?
happened
Okay.
today was I went and re-listened to when we regraded the Vin Baker, Sean Kemp, and then Gary Payton, Ray Allen trades.
You and I did?
Yeah. We
Okay.
did this, I think it
B plus
was
across the board.
I was very curious whether I had given the Bucks an F for the Gary Payton Ray Allen trade, and alas, on the podcast I gave them a D. I was more generous.
I mean, it was an F trade, though. Like, when you're thinking long term,
The
they
results
traded.
were an F, but I mean, at the time, you didn't necessarily know that Gary Payton was going to leave.
You knew that you didn't have the control over Gary Payton leaving or not.
Right. I mean, I said I considered an F.
But even then, like, the salary that they would have paid GP, we heard Kevin Durant tell him it this weekend.
Here's a fun fact. That episode of the PeltonCast, we also were reliving Kelsey Plum's 57-point game to become the all-time leading scorer.
Wow. Okay. That was
Fun
fun.
podcast.
We were reliving that, or that had just happened?
That had just happened.
Okay.
Recapping, sorry.
KD told GP over this weekend, over the weekend, when you were my age, you were the eighth man. Which, like, Gary Payton, did you hear that?
I missed that particular line.
KD, them two, like, I'm happy that GP, because you hear it and you're like, damn, that's really cold, KD. But GP could talk his shit too. So you're like, this is fine. You know,
Yes.
it's not like there's not bullying going on. Gary Payton is very capable of talking his own shit. So, but he's not wrong. Kevin Durant isn't wrong about that perspective. Now, there's a difference in the time because players just didn't play as long then as they do now and as successfully.
I mean, I think the big part of it is Gary Payton 6'4" and Kevin Durant is 6'11" probably. Like Kevin Durant is designed to, age as well as basically any player in the history of basketball. I mean, LeBron obviously, but
But also, players are playing better much older than they were in those days.
somewhat. I mean, it wasn't. It actually like that 90s cohort generally played quite well later in their careers.
Into their career,
I mean,
GP just kind
obviously,
of
it was
like
the same
got
time as
worse
Karl Malone and
faster.
John Stockton played into their 40s. Like, he played at the end of his career with Karl Malone.
Did, but so how old was GP when the trade happened?
34.
And he was not a star player by as soon as basically the next year, right?
Correct.
So even if you're talking about, even if he had the chance to resign, that deal would have been awful that he resigned on for the Bucks.
He
That's what
would
I'm
have. It would
saying.
have,
It's
yes.
like, hey, he might have resigned to a bad deal. How is that a good trade?
It wasn't. It was not a good trade.
I mean, to me, that's the only trade that really even compares in terms of just how misunderstanding of value it was, if that makes sense.
That's why I went and listened to it. Yes, I had that same thought. And it
That
was
it's
another deal that, like this, they kept completely under wraps, came out of nowhere. There were 7 years age differences between GP and Ray Allen at that point, which is, I think it's like, it's basically like,
almost exactly the
s
same.
I think it's about six, actually, with AD and.
I mean, the difference is that all both of these players are just better. Luka's just better than Ray Allen was, and that's the difference.
Yes.
But also, Ray Allen was a capable enough star to lead a team to the three seed in the playoffs. It's just Luka could be the best player in the NBA within the next 2 years. And Ray Allen, there's no world that he was probably the best player in the NBA. What were the other things around the trade that you were talking about?
That was largely it.
Okay. I don't know. I just.
I did have someone with a team ask me if it was the worst trade of all time.
Is it? What was your answer?
I don't think so.
Really?
I mean,
if you say no, then you have to give an answer. The problem is the magnitude matters. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I do. So yes, can that Sixers Kings trade actually be the worst of all time? Probably not.
How do you think that Barkley traded the Suns? Because that was the other one that it kind of reminded me of. The problem was it wasn't like a superstar for a superstar, but it just so immediately worked out for the Suns.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff Hornacek was a very good player to get in return. I would actually say the worst trade for the Sixers was where they traded Jeff Hornacek for Jeff Malone, who was not very good. Like, was like someone who, if advanced stats had existed back then, would have his career would have been perceived wildly different than it actually was at the time. And Jeff Hornacek was like wildly underrated. So the big problem for the Sixers being that they also had Hersey Hawkins, who played the same position as Jeff Hornacek. So there were a lot of problems with that one.
Well, they traded them all pretty quickly after that, right?
I mean, Hornacek was, I think, the 95 season, I want to say. Maybe it was 94. And they got him before 92, 93.
There, but the people don't understand. Like, there's one thing where somebody was talking about something, and like they were comparing like a defensive player and a quarterback, and it's like it just doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like the magnitude of these games. Like, you could do the exact same thing, but if it happens to a quarterback versus a defensive player, it's different. And if that's what you end up with, it's part of the reason why I'm like, I almost don't understand why team or like getting a young player, like if it's a quarterback, like. If it's you have a superstar young defensive player, it's like, that's cool. But if you have a superstar quarterback, it's like, this is the franchise for the next 10 to 15 years. It's part of why I don't really understand why teams don't just constantly draft quarterbacks, basically, unless you have somebody like that. Like, it doesn't really make any sense to me because, again, you could have all the other pieces in place, but nothing else matters. And that's what I'm saying with the magnitude. It's like, yes, that was an awful trade that happened and those two pieces. But
also, like,
you
if we're talking
trade.
NBA history, like, again, well, the worst trade in NBA history is, I mean, it's technically a free agent signing, but Gail Goodrich to New Orleans, and they gave up like multiple unprotected first round picks to the Lakers for Gail Goodrich when he was like 33. Like, it was similar to what we're talking about with GP, and one of those picks became Magic Johnson. Like, if you go back far enough, there are just ridiculously bonkers trades.
Where people just didn't, they were like, we need a star player. We don't give a shit about the draft. Oh, do you also think that the value of draft picks is now getting, like, people are less willing to trade? Because the De'Aaron Fox trade, I heard them talking about that. And what did you grade that?
I graded an A- for the Spurs, a B- for the Kings, and a B+ for the Bulls.
Okay. It seemed to me like the Spurs did quite well thinking. I mean, an A- makes sense, but just. I feel like maybe after the pick trade boom that happened, right? It was sort of like,
I mean, it's relatively recent. Mikal Bridges was traded, and I think this idea that like, oh, they got five first round picks, that's better than, you know, getting Anthony Davis. Like, no, probably not, because most of those picks are probably not going to be very good. But
are they five unprotected first round picks? Like.
The Milwaukee one, I believe, might technically, I don't know. I'd have to look it up. But the point
what
is,
was Denny
like,
Avdija traded for? Like, more almost than De'Aaron Fox was, right?
No, I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
He was traded for the 14th pick in what was considered a very bad draft, and then one somewhat protected pick.
Okay. All right. That was the 14th pick last year.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I like Denny Avdija. But
I mean, one of the picks that, like, Sacramento got the 2031 Minnesota pick, and like, there is a lot of upside to that. So,
I mean, it's just so far off that it's really hard to really judge that. But you're saying basically if Ant doesn't develop or if he leaves or whatever,
yeah,
then it could be a very bad pick or a very good pick.
Yeah.
I guess the people don't even bring up as much that I didn't hear this as much this weekend, but the Nets Celtics pick that set or trade that set up the Celtics for.
Oh, I don't think people have forgotten it.
I mean, that had to be in conversation with this as far as the worst trades. And how it set up another team just for like taking older players and set up another team for
I once
the
was
next
there as
generation.
executives from the Celtics and Sixers basically argued that the other of those two trades that we've talked about was the best trade. Like they were
They
like,
were
"Oh, you
argue
did
they
such an
wanted.
amazing job with that trade," to each other.
Oh, they were trying to be like modest or whatever and be like, no,
Yes.
you made the best trade. No, you made the best trade. Crazy that Rob Pelinka could be in that mix now.
Well,
I feel
give
like
Rob Blake a lot of
the
credit.
Lakers aren't getting credit for it though. Like Rob Pelinka deserves credit for, I mean, granted, he did it, right? I feel like the thing that he deserves credit for is the whole picture, is like the knowledge, the relationship building, all of these pieces. You know, like Rob Pelinka did the full thing, and obviously the relationship that he had with Nico Harrison meant that they were able to deal with each other very easily, and that Nico Harrison just didn't seem comfortable going to them and being like, "We need everything for Luka." But maybe it leaks if they do. I don't know.
I mean, our reporting suggested that the Lakers were felt like the 2031 pick would leave them too unprotected because they couldn't talk to Luka was the other part of this.
They couldn't have a conversation with him about whether he'd resign.
But I think people talk a lot about the external leverage of having multiple bidders, and that's true, but there's also the internal leverage of just saying we're only going to make this trade on our terms. And that's what I don't think Dallas used.
No, they wanted to make the trade.
Yeah.
Don't know. It's a fascinating one. But again, I just keep coming back to the point of like, we lost one of those players and our whole fucking team. We lost all of it. So the people of Dallas, it's like, I get it. You do the whole process. It's like the people of Cleveland. You know what I mean? They burn their jerseys. They complain about basketball. LeBron returned a few years later. Now they have the best team in the league. It's like, that as long as the sun keeps coming up and coming down and you're an NBA fan and a team, you're fine. But like, we don't have that.
I would look at it the other way. The Sonics haven't made a bad move in 17 years.
We love complaining about bad moves, though. It is the lifeblood. That's
Some
why
of us have different approaches to it than others.
people are mad about the Mariners, because we want more stuff to complain about. The only thing the Mariners didn't do is they haven't fed us. Mariners didn't, they didn't give us the nutrients that we have to live off of. Okay. Well, it was a fascinating weekend.
It
I
sure
feel was
was.
Stafford was traded right before the Super Bowl, right?
That
Or is that
sounds
this
right.
week also? I do feel like this week ends up being just kind of like an interesting week in terms of sports, in the time that it's mostly dead, but like this is one of the most fun Transact weeks. Are you going to talk about the, I mean, again, I just don't even know what else there is to talk about. Like, I guess you could break down like the pieces of like the fit with AD with Dallas and Luka with the Lakers and stuff like that. But I'm kind of just like, it's all out there. It's not like you have like a different take, you know?
I don't know. A lot of people did seem to think that Anthony Davis at power forward is a better idea than I think it is. But no, that's not, this is not the place.